Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
Well, you're an award-winning author who've brought the delights of meth, murder, and Amazon to the world. You're a father of five, you're a Navy veteran, you're a cybersecurity expert. You have to be the awesomely wonderful G.S. Jerry. How are you, Jerry?
I'm doing well. How about yourself? Thanks for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure.
Excellent. It's great to connect with your good self. And I've got to say, this relaunch, of course, of meth, not math, as we said before, meth, murder, and Amazon. A humorous real-life nightmare. Sounds fascinating. Share with us, what's it all about?
Absolutely. So Meth, Murder, and Amazon is based on a real story, and it's essentially death by real estate, assassination by real estate, is what I like to call it. And so a few years back, I had a situation that happened to my family and I when we were trying to sell our house. You know, how many real estate agents do you think it would take to sell a house? Most people would say one. And you know, that would be what you would think, right? But in my case, it's absolutely not one. It takes three real estate agents. And a 6-month journey along the way, as I actually get accused of murder and making meth by my own real estate agents. And it happens during an open house. And so we have an open house. We're in Florida. The open house is in Colorado. The real estate agents come upstairs to the guest bedroom and they clear the room. And when they go into the guest bedroom, they see a leg hanging out from under the bed. When they see the leg, they scream, they run out the house and they call the cops on me and say that we must have murdered somebody and hid the body under the bed. And that's really why we went to Florida. A few days later, they're like, oh, by the way, we smelled something that smelled like burning plastic in your garage. So I don't know if you know this or not, but burning plastic apparently means meth. And so they're like, someone could be making meth or smoking meth on the premises. So we're going to need you to get a meth test done, or we're going to flag your house in the MLS for suspicious behavior. I say, you're absolutely not going to do that. And so they get fired. And so the story just continues on from there and gets actually even crazier. I actually go talk to the news about this and that blows up in my face. So it's basically like the worst case of Murphy's Law you've ever heard of.
Well, I mean, I appreciate that you're obviously talking about this taking place in Florida, and that's where, you know, I can clearly say this is obviously a day-by-day existence in Florida where you're accused of murder, brewing meth, and all sorts of things where you just tried to sell your house. So we've got a little Florida expert here from Miami originally, but currently over in England. That's Kathy Manso. Welcome, Kathy. Can I formally introduce you to G.S. Jerry? And, of course, the text which we're discussing, his wonderful relaunch, Meth, Murder, and Amazon, which I think, Jerry, is more autobiographical than anything else, really.
Yeah. So I penned it as nonfiction. It's actually won some awards. But I tried to keep the story as true life as possible. But I change everybody's names, change all the places. I think the only real name in the actual whole book is Amazon. And so, you know, I wanted people to relate to the story. I wanted them to see like, hey, this did happen. So I'll actually include video evidence, or not video, photographic evidence in the book. Pictures of my family with like our faces blurred out. The actual, you know, meth house, which is a nice house, right? Like it's in the suburbs. Like it's definitely not what you would think of as a meth house, but that doesn't stop them from these outlandish accusations.
I'm not sure whether we actually have a preconception about meth houses, but witness one normal family embark on a hilarious and entirely unexpected journey involving, among other surprises, assassins, meth, murder, and the end of Amazon. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Kathy, questions, please.
I have many questions about the book, but I have to address the first thing first. So as I'm from Florida as well, I see that you are wearing a Florida State hat and shirt there.
Right.
And I also went to Florida State University.
Go that's right.
Go this is a rare moment.
That's right. You know, I was going back and forth of what I was going to wear, and I was like, if she's playing in the tournament for the women's tournament, so I was like, I'll wear this meth issue stuff. Sometimes I have a Tampa Bay hat on, but today it's like FSU, so how appropriate.
Sorry, you're from where?
I know, I just said how appropriate, right? You went to FSU. I love
well,
FSU.
I mean, so. I never meet Seminoles anymore because I live in England now. So it's that's why it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, I recognize this situation here.
I've seen that before, right? Yeah.
We always like to ensure that the interviewers and the interviewees match up properly, Jerry. That's part and parcel of our policy here. It's part of our deal with Mickey, really. So it's no surprise, really.
Right. You talked to Mickey, and Mickey told you I was an FSU fan, so he's like, all right, we got to have this guy on.
Yeah. Kathy, back to you.
Well, now that we've addressed the Garnet and Gold, I just thought I can finally ask you my questions. I guess since this is the relaunch of the book, I wanted to ask, like, when you started this book forever ago, what first gave you inspiration?
Yeah, so the inspiration is kind of obviously real life events, but also, right, I wanted to write a story that's just very different. So, you know, writing has rules. You have to build the characters a certain way. You have to use the correct types of sentences. You can't use run-on sentences. But why, right? Me and you, we're talking run-on sentences all the time. I was like, why can't you do that with a book? Now it's not like tons and tons of run-on sentences, but I'll use it to my advantage. I'll actually misspell words on purpose to just add a different layer to the book. And I'll also even include emojis in random spots. And so things you wouldn't expect from the book are in this book. And I use a roller coaster to kind of take you through the journey, right? And so when you go on a roller coaster, right, you go click, 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 you're going up the roller coaster, the anticipation's building, and boom, you drop right through. Everybody's screaming their heads off. And so as you drop into the roller coaster, or you take a turn or a loop, right, something's happening in the book. And so inspiration, you know, it's kind of based on that as well. As you know, I think sometimes books, even movies, right, they have these slow spots and they can be boring at times. I wanted to do something that was like in your face, exciting, entertaining, engaging from the first turn of the page until the end. And so it's fast paced. It's quite quick of a read, but there's always something going on. So you're always going to be like, oh my gosh, what just happened? Or, oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Like, I obviously can't make this stuff up, right? Like you, but when I tell the story to people, they're like, I wouldn't believe you unless you're actually telling me the story yourself. I was like, yes, this really did happen. Like, I couldn't even make this up if I tried, right? Like, this sounds ridiculous.
And I wanted to ask as well, because you said you also involved your family in the book. How has that aged with your family?
Oh, they make meth jokes all the time. My wife sent me a meme the other day, and it was like a sign from church, and it was like, what would Jesus do? And it was like, underneath, it was like, he wouldn't be making meth. And that was, and she sent it to me. I'm like, yep, that's totally me, right? I just make meth all the time. So the kids will like see funny things like that. My wife will find funny things like that, and we'll just joke around about it. Even when it happened, you know, I mean, it was certainly a difficult situation, but I feel like we try to stay pretty even keeled. Don't let the highs be too high, the lows be too low. But there's definitely times where I was like so defeated. I was like, what the heck can I do, right? Like, I feel like I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. I'm hiring professionals. Like, I'm not trying to sell the house myself, and I just can't catch a break.
I mean, the extraordinary thing that comes across to me, basically, is, I mean, as we said, you're a Navy veteran, a cybersecurity expert, a tattoo enthusiast. Well, okay, maybe the latter one might not be involved with that. But, I mean, this seems as though it could be taken out of a script from NCIS. I mean, did you feel that when you were going through this whole process?
Yeah, so when this happened, I had not seen Breaking Bad at the time. So this is 2019. Breaking Bad had been out for quite some time. But I told somebody what happened about at the open house, and they're like, that's from Breaking Bad. I was like, no, it's not. He's like, absolutely, you need to watch it. And so I start watching it, and I get to the episode where Jesse and Walter are making meth in the basement while the open house is happening. I was like, yep, that's it. That's what happened. They clearly watched Breaking Bad the night before, and it was fresh in their mind. And they're like, yep, this guy's making meth in his garage, because that's just what has to be. So it definitely felt like that. It was almost like a scene out of a movie. You know, basically the worst case of perception meets reality. If there's a body under the bed, well, clearly that body must be dead. They didn't say anything. They didn't be like, hey, who's that? No, they just scream and run out the house and call the cops. So it's just like, you know, what can go wrong will go wrong in this scenario, and quite over the top in most cases.
And were the Florida police understanding? Did they effectively shrug their shoulders and say, these things happen?
So the police show up, they come there, and there's actually nobody under the bed. I don't want to give any spoilers or anything, right? But instead of murdering someone, I have a spotless record. I've never been arrested before, actually, in my entire life. So, you know, it's also kind of why I use the pen name. I do cybersecurity work. I work with a lot of Fortune 100 and 500 companies. I don't want them to see, hey, Assessor Jerry Drake is coming to look at their systems. Oh, he was accused by his realtors of murder and making meth. Like, I'm trying to keep the things separate. But as I've gone further along, you know, I have a publicist who's like, no, you should use your real name. Like, you can tell people you have the pen name, right? Like, it's been so many years that you'll be fine. I was like, and yeah, to be fair, like, there's a news article that's still out there about me. And I haven't had it come up at work yet. If anything, I'd just be like, oh yeah, by the way, guys, I wrote a book and I'll tell them about it. And they just think it's the funniest thing in the world. So.
So your writing style has been compared to Hunter S. Thompson, Lemony Snicket, even Chuck Palahniuk. I get the pronunciation wrong from that point of view.
Yeah.
Exactly. There you go. I mean, were you tempted to call it Fear and Loathing in Miami?
Yeah, you know, I like to call it Death by Real Estate. You know, because just the way the real estate agents kind of treated me along the way. The first guy that I actually had as my real estate agent hired me or sold me that house. So like we actually had a good relationship. Well, as the story progresses, he's actually not marketing my house because he's not even in the same state. He has moved and never told me. And so things start happening. He's supposed to send out flyers to like surrounding neighborhoods and he's just like ghosting me. I don't hear from him. I'll be like putting in offers in different areas and he'll like take hours to respond. And so the lady that was showing us houses in a different area actually is the person I go to for my second real estate agent. So I fire him. I'm like, clearly, you don't care. Like, you are lying to me. You don't live in this state, right? Like, you're not working for me at this point. And so in the book, I'll actually liken real estate agents to assassins, right? They get hired. They have a contract to hire and to accomplish a job. And so real estate agents, right? They have a contract. They have a job to do. And so throughout this whole process, almost like they're taking it out on me, like I'm the focus of the assassination and they assassinate my character. You know, they make all these outlandish accusations. And like both of them have met me 20, 25 times. They've been inside my house in my garage. So they clearly knew me. And so I can't say what happened with them, but like you would think that they would give me the benefit of that. Like, hey, something happened here, but that's not what happens. Mm-hmm.
In Britain, a recent survey suggested that the three least popular professions were, in no particular order, journalists, real estate agents, and I think reality TV shows also stars came into that in terms of top of the thing. I mean, the lawyers, of course, how can we get lawyers? They're right. Also there. In fact, many people have actually said, what do you actually call a shipwreck of real estate agents at the bottom of the sea? Answer is start. It's a harsh joke, but never mind. Is that something which goes over to the States as well? Is that a kind of, you know, are they all equally, you know, if one of your children says, Daddy, I want to be a real estate agent, I want to be a realtor, you say, no.
No, I would, you know, I'm going to support them in whatever they want to do, but I'll be like, just remember, right? Remember what happened to us and use that as fuel for the next thing, right? If you see something crazy, you might want to like raise your voice, right? Like the ball has voice, hey, who's under the bed? If so, you happen to run across somebody under the bed, or you know, just if you smell something in the garage, right? Actually go investigate it. Just like, oh, burning plastic means meth. Like, no, that's not the case, right? Like, not everybody's making meth. I don't know what like skewed perception you have or like alternate reality you live in, but that's not normal, right? And so, like, I have a good job. I have multiple degrees, right? I have kids. I mean, you know, it could be the beard, it could be the tattoos, right? Who knows, right? I just got, you know, stereotyped throughout this whole process, but I feel like I'm a pretty nice guy, right? And I even try not to swear in the book. So I'll use different ways to say a swear word without swearing because I want my kids to be able to read. I want them to read the F word all the time or like all the different curse words. So I try to blur the line really well of even not swearing. But it's funny you mentioned reality shows because I'm actually writing a new book. It's going to be a reality show in a book. And so hitting cameras, you follow along with family. And so, if that's one of the things that people don't like, well, good. I'm going to give them a taste of it in this book in a very humorous way.
See where you're coming from. Kathy, back to yourself. I don't think, as far as I can recall, when I last in Lincoln, we had much burning plastic around the Siren Studios, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I asked them. I was like, was something like actually burning? Was there like a bottle that had melted or something? They're like, no, burning plastic means meth. And I guess the real estate agent had actually had a family member that had dealt with it. So she knew what it smelled like. And so I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't make meth. I don't smoke meth, right? Like I have a good job, right? Like I deal with important things, highly secure things. Like I'm not like,
And that white powder that you see scattered around the home, it's not what you think what it is, honestly, you know.
It's, right, it's baby powder, right? It's just baby powder.
Yeah. Kathy. Well,
I just feel like the more we talk, the more I'm like, man, these are such a great way of like perceptions about Florida. But like perceptions is very important, because it's never what it seems, I think, is really right. the big thing that comes to Floridians. I know we get joked a lot with like Florida Man, right? And I like to remind people that like the reason we have Florida Man is because we have laws in place that allow us to understand the what like criminal charges that occur in the state compared to other states. Right. That's a huge aspect of it. So I was like, I think we have a little bit more transparency, if anything.
It's true.
Well, and I mean, you would know. And I mean, it's funny that you were saying real estate, because the minute you said real estate, I was like, okay, this is like selling Tampa. Here we go. I'm there. And I guess my question is, now that you're creating this other book with, where it's a book about a reality TV show about real estate, how are you going to try to incorporate, I guess, transparency in that book as well?
So this new book is, right, it's going to be a reality show. It's going to be based in Florida. And so, right, whenever the kind of the background around it is, right, you go to meet your significant other, or you meet your girlfriend, right? So the time-honored tradition, right? You fall in love. You go to meet the parents, you meet the family, right? You live happily ever after. Well, what happens when you meet the family and they live in Florida and the banks of the river they live on is filled with alligators, and their family is hilarious, right? There's all these different things that happen. And so as you go along, the main character is secretly recording all these events that are transpiring. And so I'll actually be like, this character looks into the camera and says this, but they don't know they're being recorded. I'm the only one that knows. And so I have a secret recording device, secret cameras hidden throughout. And so they'll take me actually through these different events, or something will happen. We'll be on a jet ski. They'll throw me off the jet ski and into the tree somewhere. And so like, I'll capture those types of events, and even more so, right? Like when you meet your wife's father for the first time, what's the biggest stereotype, right? Dad's at the table, he's cleaning his shotgun, right? Trying to be super intimidating. Well, I'll actually take that and I'll amplify it. So not only does he has his shotgun, but he's got ammunition. He's even got a machete that's covered in blood next to him, right? Like he's really trying to be like super intimidating. And so I'll take you through in a reality show perspective, kind of like that. So you meet the parents, you meet the family. Oh, the family needs help with something. You go and help out, and then crazy stuff happens. You go and do these other things, and more crazy things happen. And so it just builds and builds and builds until the final reveal, where I'm like, oh, by the way, guys, I've been recording you, and you're going to be on this reality show. And they're going to be like, what? And then essentially, so if it does well, I got plans to write, two or three more ones that kind of have a reality show kind of concept. Did some research. I haven't found too many books that are actually a reality show, like a true reality show, right? Like Hunger Games has aspects of like a reality show element. Stephen King has a Running Man with like kind of a reality show element, but they're kind of small portions, nothing that's like a true reality show. So I think I'm dealing with something kind of new here.
Absolutely. I guess your research would really have to come from reality TV shows themselves. So what reality TV shows do you think you'd have to be prepared for to watch?
So probably anything dealing with like the real world. You know, I kind of play on the slogan, right? When people stop being fake and start being real, well, what happens when families stop being fake and start being real, right? Because you meet the boyfriend or you meet the girlfriend, and you meet the family, and right, they're all like, they got their best look on, you know, they have, you know, hey, we have to be nice, we have to be this way. Well, what happens when their guard drops? And then they actually give you an inside look into how they are, how they interact with people, how they kind of just interact even among themselves. And so I'll take you through, hey, I talk with her brothers, this kind of thing happens. I talk with her dad, you know, he's intimidating. He tries to do these things to me. And so on and on we go, and you just get a really unique inside look into this family life, as well as from like, hey, the boyfriend meets the girlfriend and then meets the family, and just how they treat each other. Cause everybody's experienced that, right? Everybody's dated somebody or been with someone, or they got married and they met the family, and the family sometimes not the best or not the funnest, or sometimes they're great and you guys get along great. But there's all these different kinds of events that happen along the way.
I think it's really impressive that you make these books, not just, the books that you're planning on writing, but also the one that you're promoting now is so relatable, especially with just like human characteristics, like things that experiences that we've been through before. Just out of curiosity, have you considered trying to sell this to Netflix, because I really think you could make bank after.
Yeah, it's not the first person that said that the reality show concept is actually getting pitched in LA. I met a lady that's a publisher, and she had a contact that knows some directors and producers in LA because they grew up together. She's like, send me a 30-second elevator pitch and I'll send it this month. So he's flying out to LA this month. He's going to pitch it and see what happens. I need to get an agent. It's sometimes tough to get an agent. I'll tell you that, especially when you don't follow the rules, when you write very differently, right? I know there's a market for it. There's an audience for it, right? But everybody's like, oh, well, what's this book like? Well, what's that book like? But what happens when you write something very unique, right? There's, you can always find comparisons, but sometimes it's really tough to find a comparison because my book is absolutely humorous, but it covers real estate. It has suspense, it has mystery, right? Because everything you would want in a great book, and it's not boring, right? It's very fast-paced. And so, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes you got to take a risk. And so that's kind of why I wrote the way that I wrote. But as I started having people read it, review it, I started getting really good feedback. And I used to tell my friends when I would send it to them, like, hey, if this sucks, like, let me know. Like, don't let me make a fool of myself because I'm like doing something new here. And no one ever said anything. Then I started getting some reviews, and I usually get pretty good reviews. And they're always like, this is really funny. Like, I wasn't expecting something like this. So.
I'm looking at a couple of those reviews at present. Actually, this book is good for a laugh if that is what you're in the mood for. And my personal favorite, actually, from Book Viral Reviews, reminiscent of Robin Williams on speed. Interesting. Right. I mean, it sounds as though this is the ideal text that Ron DeSantis should actually use as he runs for president of the United States. You know, I mean, this could help along the way.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so like I said, my book is fast paced, and you know, that's what I was after. I'm not the biggest reader. I'm not an avid reader by any means. But whenever I was growing up, you know, I'm the kid that wanted to watch the movies to do the book reports. I don't have time to read. Like, I want to be outside and play games with my friends and go play sports. And so I watched the movies, read the book reports, and I did well. And so whenever I would start reading, I'm like, oh gosh, reading's so boring. There's reading that's boring, but there's obviously really great books. And so as you get older, you actually start to find, like, you have to read for everything. My parents used to tell me this, and I didn't believe them. But my job, I read tons of reports, technical documents, right? So I'm always reading. And a lot of it's dry, a lot of it's boring. And so I wanted to eliminate that and just bring something that's basically super fast paced. And so it definitely goes downhill like a meth rush, like I mentioned. But
you know anything about that, of course. You know, we have to step away from that.
Absolutely not.
Potentially, like what you thought that could be, yeah.
That's right. But I'll actually play on it. I have a website. And so I have a tab on my website called Meth Lab Creations. And so people will see them like, oh, great, this guy's, you know, giving us a recipe for meth. I ain't giving you recipes, but they're free recipes to like cook some food at home. I'm a pretty good chef, you know, obviously besides the meth. And so, you know, I create recipes. Hey, you went to Cheesecake Factory, you got like some tamale cakes. I'll find that recipe. I'll make it myself. And it turned out well, I'll share it. So I'm a pretty good chef. I try to teach my kids how to cook as well. So I will share those things on the website, plus the blog and some other things.
You started off as a child working for your father's bookbindery business. I mean, what led you into the Navy from that?
The bookbindery business, I hated it. That's what my dad did. But it's like, you know, hey, you have books, whether they're spiral bound books or they're the paperbacks, you have to stick glue on that. Well, there's a machine that does that. And those things break all the time.
Don't sniff the glue from the machine. Otherwise, it's a different time entirely.
Well, yeah. And then the glue is actually like not what you would think is glue, but they're like little chips that you throw in there. There's a pot that melts it, heats it up. And then that's what is used to constantly coat the backs of the books and then add a cover onto the back. And so he would teach me how to run these machines. I was like working since I was 12 years old. So I hated it, right? Like, I just want to be outside with my friends and go play sports. And they're all like, hey, we're going to go play basketball. I'm like, I got to work. And so, like, I'm working with my dad and hanging out, you know, like, it did give me a good work ethic, but the job itself, like, I did not like it. Looking back on it, you know, it did give me a great work ethic. And so, you know, I appreciate that time because I got extra time with my parents that probably a lot of kids didn't get at that time.
So as an author, do you prefer people to actually buy your books electronically as opposed to actually having the physical copy in your hand? Does that bring back negative memories?
No, it doesn't. I mean, I look back on it now, like, both my parents have passed. And so, yeah, I look at it as some of the good times. You know, if anybody's going to support me, I kind of push them towards the audiobook because the way I write the book is just, it's just not what you would expect from a book, right? And so if someone's like, hey, I'm a traditionalist, the book has to follow these rules. Okay, then you should definitely read the audiobook.
You You just seem to be breaking up there slightly, Jerry. It's okay. I think there's a slight sort of crackle or something on the line. Maybe as I say, the Zoom link has actually got some sort of meth habits that it's not sort of breaking into at present. I think we're okay now. Never mind. Kathy, anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, so much. I mean, first of all, the first thing I thought of when you said what you your dad did and what you grew up doing, I was like, man, one wrong step and you could have been a character from You, just like Joe Goldberg. But I think we're progressing pretty well here. I was curious as to, because you've obviously had so many amazing life experiences coming, and you know, you're constantly doing more. I wanted to kind of reflect back more on, where were you stationed in the Navy and how did it take you to meeting and creating your family?
So whenever I was 18, we found out that my wife was pregnant. And so I actually was going to join the Navy because I wanted to get my degree. At the end of the day, I wanted to get a degree. I wanted to get my education. But then she got pregnant. We got married. And then I was like, all right, I definitely need to join the Navy now because like I need a job. So I joined the Navy when I was barely 18, about to turn 19. And so my first duty station is Lemoore, California. I tell people Lemoore, California, like, where the heck is that? And I'm like, have you ever seen the movie Aaron Brockovich? And most people are like, yep, I've seen that. I was like, all right, so the Navy base is like 2 hours from there. It smells terrible. It's in the middle of nowhere. No one would know it unless you've been there. It's like an hour south of Fresno. And so as I'm going through school, because there's a lot of schooling for the Navy, I get to the end of my schooling and you get to pick, you know, they usually tell you, hey, you're going to one location or the other. You're going to be sea duty or you're going to be shore duty. And so as I break the news to my wife, I'm like, hey, I got good news and bad news. Which one do you want to hear first? And she's like, give me the good news. I was like, all right, I got shore duty, so I'm not going on a boat. But the bad news is we're going to California. And that was the one place she did not want to go because we're from Florida. All our family's from Florida.
Right.
She was upset. I was like, hey, like, there's nothing we can do, right? Like, that's where we're going. That's where they pick. So that's what we're going to do. If anything, you know, we got shore duty. So let's just look on the positives. So we have our first kid. You know, while I'm in A school or while I'm in technical school for the Navy, we drive from Florida to Virginia. And then after I finish that school, then we go Virginia to California. I'm there for 2 years. We get pregnant. I have another kid. So now I have two boys at the time. They're like, you know, 21 months apart. Now I go from shore duty to sea duty, but the sea duty is a big like 747 plane. And so it's a logistics plane. Those don't go on aircraft carriers. So technically I'm sea duty, but I don't go anywhere. So we go from California all the way back to Virginia. And so I get stationed at Virginia Beach. I actually liked it there. Virginia Beach is really pretty. There's lots of nice houses there. And so, you know, that was a nice place to live. It was within driving distance of Florida. You can't drive from Florida to California very quickly, right? It's going to take you a few days. And so Virginia is about an 8 to 10 hour drive. And so we would go back to family and visit them. But when we were in Virginia, we had our third child and that was our first daughter. So that was really exciting. And, I got out of the Navy once I got my degree. So I was in for 7 years. I actually never got deployed anywhere. I was stateside, just all over the country. And then that's whenever we decided like, hey, we're going to move to Colorado. My wife has family in Colorado. I had just got this technical degree in IT, computer information systems. And she's like, hey, let's go to Colorado. Denver's like the tech capital. I'm like, oh, I've never been there. That sounds like a great idea. And so that's exactly what we did. We moved to Colorado and stayed there for 7 years and then moved back to Florida. Oh. So we had another kid in Colorado and then we just had a baby 3.5 months ago. So oldest is almost going to be 18 this year and the youngest is a newborn. So quite the age range.
Well, congratulations on that. I mean, a huge thanks obviously to your wife as well. Interesting, Kathy also did the drive from Miami to California. Perhaps it's something in the Florida water that, you know, you need to do this whole thing.
It might be. Right. Yeah. California, I guess, is a good comparison for the climate, at least. I did have some good experiences, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, because here's the thing. I lived in Southern California and I was a Marine correspondent for Camp Pendleton in San Clemente. And I think what I can imagine in your book is, I wonder if you've used any of the inspiration from base life living. When it's living with so many other families on a base, that's a very unique community.
Yes, yes. I actually do have a plan to write a book about the Navy. I even got a title already. And so I'm going to call it Never Again Volunteer Yourself, TEAR. Yeah, Never Again Volunteer Yourself. And so I have 7 years of experiences in the Navy that are just hysterical. You know, first time you get to boot camp, right? They're like, hey, drop your bags on the ground, and people will like set them down. They're like, we didn't tell you to sit it down. We told you to drop it. Everybody pick your bags up, right? And so like, I have a lot of funny experiences. And so basically like, not to bash the Navy or anything, I love my time there. And, you know, I got my degrees and I also got, you know, the VA home loan. So all in all, the benefits are really great. But if you're going to do it, you should definitely go officer versus enlisted, because enlisted gets treated like crap. That's for sure.
Oh man, I'm just excited to read everything now, but I'm in it.
Oh yeah. I could probably write 10 books just based on different life experiences that I had. I was thinking about it, like in the meth house, right? I actually had a situation with some contractors and they were supposed to be finishing the basement. And so during that whole process, they start doing the framing around down the basement. They break a water line, water splooshes everywhere. They're like, oh, don't worry, we'll fix it. They fix it. Breaks again. And so like, it takes like 3 days for us to get water back. And so basically real estate agents, they can be shitty. Well, everybody knows contractors are shitty too. And so I have a lot of,
well, just hold the language there momentarily. Otherwise we'll have to get a bleeper. So
we'll beep them.
It's British audience. We know where we're coming from. It's okay. Are there any musical inspirations that you have when you're writing? I mean, we often ask this question of authors. Some authors like to have a soundtrack to a movie playing. Some people like to have complete silence. What's your own particular process, Jerry?
So for writing itself, I have a very different process. I would say I actually write the whole first draft of my books on my phone. I do that just because, right, you know, everybody kind of is close to their phone. But sometimes I'll just be thinking about something, or my kids will say something. We'll be on a walk, and they'll be like, they'll say something like, oh, that would be a really funny character name. And so I'll just write it down in my notes. But the way I build my stories is I'll actually create the chapter titles first, make little notes about like what that chapter is going to be about. And then I'll just start free flowing writing, and I'll try to flow it together as I go along. And then I'll read through it, and then I'll revise and read through it and revise until I get kind of done with that. And then I'll upload it to a tool called Scrivener. And then I'll edit it from there, like professionally edit it, and then I'll get ready to basically submit it from that point.
So no music whatsoever, though?
I use music sometimes. Sometimes I don't. It just kind of depends on the mood. I actually like classical music. I taught myself how to play the piano. But I like all sorts of music, right? I like Frank Sinatra. We'll be out in the gym working out with my sons. I'll have some Frank Sinatra playing, or we'll listen to some hip-hop or some pop, right? Whatever's playing, right? I'm not necessarily too picky on the music choice. But I'll actually use music in my books. And so the first book has funny little rhyme-alongs, right? You know, London Bridge is falling down. Well, I'll take London Bridge is falling down, and I'll remix that with different things or different words to make a point or make it funnier, like Whistle While You Work. You know, the Snow White song, I'll do that one. If you've ever heard the Chicken Wing, Hot Dog and Bologna, I do a complete Thanksgiving remix to that in the last chapter, and it's about Thanksgiving. So instead of chicken wing, it's turkey wing, taters and some gravy, stuffing is amazing. And so I'll just add little elements like that just to give the books just a different dimension, because I don't know how many books do that, but I thought that would be fun to do. So that's what I just decided to do. So it's almost kind of like a Dr. Seuss kind of thing, I guess. I like Dr. Seuss, you know, read a lot of kids' books when you have lots of kids.
Yeah. Well, the book is again entitled Meth, Murder and Amazon, not to be confused with any kind of guide to calculus, differentiation or integration. That would be Math, Murder and Amazon, which I'm sure you've heard that line before.
So.
Yeah, exactly. We just sort of work through that. We've got two final questions that we need to put to you at this particular stage, Jerry. First of all, have you had an interesting or reasonably satisfying Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you?
Yeah, it's been great. No, you guys asked lots of great questions. It's great to work with Kathy, right? We kind of have similar backgrounds. We both have lived in Florida. We both are in the military. So, you know, all good discussions. You know, I always have a good time when I get on these podcasts, and just a chance to meet somebody new and share my story and just give a little bit of insight into, you know, my life.
Well, then the next critical question, before we actually go and listen to some Tipperary tales from another author, this time based in Tipperary, is basically, will you be kind enough to come back and will you join us again in the not too distant future?
Absolutely, I will. And so I can come back. You know, I'm actually in the process of writing the new book, like I was telling you, The Reality Show. It's going to be in a book. I'm going to put it on pre-order pretty soon here. So I'm hoping to debut at some time between summer and maybe September at the end. So. But I'm already 7 chapters in. I've got a good synopsis, so happy to come back on and share with you guys kind of a little bit more detail about it, and we can just dedicate that kind of show to that. But yeah, I'd be more than happy to come on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's time for another Tipperary tale, curiously being recorded on St. Patrick's Day, appropriately enough, with Jenny Finch.
Hello there. This episode is from March 2022. Spring is on the march here in Tipperary. Excuse the pun, please. And everything is waking up, flying, walking and growing. And how it can grow here. There's been a warm few days to finish off February, followed by several very wet weeks. Now it is sunny during the day, though devilish cold at night. This has obviously encouraged nature to flourish, nest and breed, a lot of it in our wood. We've been hearing wood pigeons cooing away for a month now. Coming from the northeast of England, this was a sign summer was almost here, but we're a good way further south. And everything is much earlier now. The birds are gathering in large numbers, many of them nesting in what now must resemble a tenement at the back of the wood. The large mature trees wear a coat of ivy that's woven itself into a thick hedge, and Fergus, our tree man, reports many nests in there already. Whilst not as indiscriminate as some nations, there is a long-standing tradition of hunting in Ireland. We are in an area designated a sanctuary, but often hear shots at night. Never mind the dipstick who came back twice to shoot more shells over the poor geese. The work on the wood has thinned it out considerably, and there is some sign of illicit entry and woodcutting. As the boundaries are less than secure, we'll have to install a fence along the road. With material costs rising to ridiculous heights, this is going to be very expensive, but I think it is a necessary investment. Like everything else, it needs several different people to do different jobs. First, the land needs to be cleared and levelled, a job for a mini digger. There's been some fly tipping of rubble and concrete too, so they'll have to dig a pit and bury it all. Then the man with the posts comes in and sets them, and the rails. All 91 metres of them. Then Fergus comes back to put up the wire and make it secure. We have always said we share our home with a lot of other creatures, and we don't want to cut off their access just to keep out occasional intruders and dogs. Fergus will be constructing small mammal doors in the fence, situated next to the little tracks running from the boundary, to make sure they can still get in and out. We hope this will be done in the next few weeks, fingers crossed. Mind you, something has its own way in. I found muddy paw prints on the lid of the compost bin. It could be a pine marten or perhaps a feral cat. I'm not keen on pine martens, vicious little beasts, but they do hunt rats. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend. There was a bit of a problem with the water last week. No surprise there. It was getting very hard again. And when I checked the water softener, I found it unplugged. This could be a disaster for our appliances, not to mention our lovely new boiler. I ran another test on the water and found it was an eye-watering 410 parts per million. 180, you may recall, is considered exceptionally hard. I couldn't get the softener to work for several days, and it looks as if some of our much-needed fence money would go on a new one. Then I remembered my father's ultimate remedy. Jiggle the wires and give it a kick. Another triumph. Thanks, Dad. As well as all the birds singing around us, we have flowers springing up all over. The daffodils have pretty much been and gone already, but some later bulbs are coming through. We were hoping for irises, but may have to wait a year for them. The little garden we planted for Betsy, a beloved friend's dog, has sprung into life. Much to my surprise, the chrysanthemums we put in last summer have survived and are flourishing. They've always died on me before. The aubrietia has spread and we'll be adding more of them, and the little pansies are already flowering. In the lane we have daisies, dandelions, primrose, and the first gorse blooms. Lots of yellow this early on. So here we are, our second spring in the house, and feeling well enough to enjoy it. I realised yesterday it's a year since my first Tipperary blog. Now there are 48 episodes. Not bad, as I only intended to write 12. Jackie rolled her eyes and pointed out, I'm a typical dyslexic overachiever. 48 episodes, not to mention 5 books in a trilogy. And we had 4 of our 2 dogs until recently, though I can blame the dogs partly on Jackie. And I wouldn't be without them. After the bleakness of winter, when everything is grey and mud-coloured, it is lovely to see spring on the march here again. This, however, has been another few mixed weeks for us. We do feel we're making progress finally in some directions. It's very much 2 steps forward, 1 step back. Spring is its usual manic self, and everything is bursting into life. The wood looks so much healthier now, despite the many damaged ash tree. The backward step? Well, the brambles, bindweed and ivy are also rearing their nasty little heads and need taming as soon as possible. We need to get the sit-on mower working, but are waiting for the fence to be put up, so we hope Fergus will give us a quick driving lesson then. The little garden at the end of the Majestic is going from strength to strength and now looks quite lovely. As well as the pansies and aubrietia, there are bee bombs waiting to flower later in the year, and it should be a source of almost year-round pleasure for us and the people passing by. It gives us hope we can bring this land back to life, as when we moved in, this bit was an old stone-wall trough full of rubble and rats. Definitely 2 steps forward. Despite our best efforts, we still have not got the solar system finalised. The panels are working and delivering electricity to the pump for much of the day, especially when it is sunny. On the other hand, the old controller continues to roar away full blast, using a stupid amount of power and wiping out most of the gains. We are still travelling hopefully, but as this is another holiday weekend, it's likely to have to wait another week or so before it's finally fixed. Then we can have flow meters fitted and have some proper idea of usage and costs. A step back for the moment, I think. I've been writing a bit more recently, and the next Alex Hastings book is well underway. This is book 6, by the way. Book 5 is awaiting publication. And as it's still not had a final edit, I'm now writing book 6 blind. The great thing about a series is the freedom to build longer stories and develop characters over a longer period. The downside is each book builds on the one before. And until the manuscript is finally cleared, there's a danger something I use in book 6 may be lost or altered in the final edit. 2 forward and 1 back again. There are lots of small gains in the house, however. I now have a usable table, as Jackie cut almost 6 inches off the legs in fitted levelers. I'm reading this in comfort at my desk for a hobbit, rather than wobbling around on the cushion. With a viable timer for the heater, we've managed to cut our gas usage by over 50%. A good thing, as the price is very high and delivery, supposedly 5 working days, is now at 20 and rising. And our lovely joiner moved the heater in the back porch so we could put the new freezer in there. This means I can get at the cupboards in the utility room, hopefully getting the last of the packing undone. Definitely steps forward. After some lovely sunny days, it is grey and cold here for Easter. We've used 99% of the logs, so we need a fire. We will have to scratch around for food, fuel. The wood from the cut trees needs another 6 months to dry properly. So now it's back to gleaning the dead branches brought down by the storms. This is definitely a day for staying in and settling down to indoor pursuits. So I'll get out another jigsaw. I finished my latest challenge a couple of years ago, This was a picture of the Cleveland Klondike, a one-day cycle race around East Cleveland. It included four trips up the bank at Saltburn, a climb with three hairpin bends and a gradient of 1.4. It was a great spectacle, and this image brought back lovely memories of a place where we were very happy for many years. Last year, we had a little celebration as we remembered we met 39 years ago. We made dinner and shared a bottle of Prosecco, recalling some of the steps on our journey together. We decided I should make the starter, salad and some smoked meat. Jackie suggested I make little florets by winding the meat round a suitably washed finger and twisting the end. Well, I have two observations on this. Don't expect a dyspraxic to get this right, and don't try it with mortadella. The result was not so much a bunch of flowers, more a herd of triffids being chased by giant slugs. Still, it tasted just fine, and a good evening was had by all. And who knew Lidl sold quail's eggs? Jackie's special treat. So that was us on a cold and grey Easter Sunday. All good wishes to you all, and thank you for listening.
Well, there we are, another epic scenario. I suppose actually technically it'd be your 40th anniversary if that was going back in time. So all good from that point of view. Clearly you're settling down and becoming established there, which is excellent. But the big question is, of course, what will you be doing as he moves bang up to date with respect to the bloke who took over from Eddie Jones as manager of the side that was thrashed, and I say again, thrashed by France? Thrashed.
I will be hoping England put up a better show so Ireland get a decent match to mark their Grand Slam. There's no stopping them now.
Yeah. And do you think Steve Borthwick's out of his depth, or do you think it's a case of, no, he needs a lot more time to kind of work through this whole process?
Well, he needs a lot more time. And the other thing is, when he took over, there was a rule he could only change five players within the existing squad. So essentially, he's shuffling a pack with very few new players in. As soon as the Six Nations finishes, he can start shuffling for the World Cup. But there are no more competitive international matches before the World Cup. So it's going to be very interesting.
Well, so we'll obviously keep watching that space accordingly. In terms of St. Patrick's Day, I mean, huge celebrations. I mean, clearly you've got Cheltenham Gold Cup taking place. You've got all sorts of other things. And indeed, we'll be following this little feature with two appropriate links, one with the Chief Executive Officer for Visit England, although one might ask, why would you want to? The follow-up with that, which is the whole notion of just celebrity holidays and various other bits and pieces as well.
Sounds good. I was having a quick look on the Irish television, RT1, and they had the Dublin St. Patrick's Day celebration parade on. I was looking to see if Jessica had sneaked her way in there. Good for her if she has. I hope if she's there, she's enjoying it.
Excellent. Okay, for the moment, Jenny Finch, we salute you. Take care. I remind you, you're listening to Southside Broadcasting and indeed Siren Radio's Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Well, we've just been listening to another Tipperary tale from Jenny Finch. How can people actually follow you, Jenny, via the socials?
Well, I post every fortnight a Tipperary tale. The next one's due on Sunday. And if you just go to www.jennyfinch, that's Jenny with an IE, Finch, @me.uk.
It's perhaps one of the quirks of contemporary life that as we celebrate the Cheltenham Gold Cup and, of course, St. Patrick's Day, we're also beginning the start of English Tourism Week. Yay, English Tourism Week 2023. And we're delighted to actually welcome to the programme now the director at Visit England, of course, the wonderful Andrew Stokes. How are you, Andrew?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. I mean, tourism has become de facto pretty much one of our prime ways of actually making a living in Britain, despite what people say. What about all the manufacturing? What about all of this, etc.? It is inevitable we come back to tourism because it is a huge industry. And looking at some of these figures here, £76 billion generated in domestic visitor spending in the pre-pandemic era of 2019. Supports 2.6 million jobs. Really, take tourism out, and we would be up the proverbial without a paddle, would we not?
Well, absolutely. I think a lot of people don't realise what an important industry it is. Tourism touches so many people in that, you know, when you think of the wider visitor economy that makes up our tourism infrastructure, it's huge. You know, many hundreds of thousands of small businesses that rely on tourism. And tourism, of course, there's such a range of activity in it. You know, it could be day visits, could be a short break that we might take, or it could be a longer holiday, or indeed business visits. People go to conferences. It's a huge industry. Mm-hmm. Inevitably, the pandemic was very, very difficult. You know, our industry was in special measures in the pandemic for longer than any other industry, and it was cut deeper than any other industry. So that's why English Tourism Week this year for me is really important. It's really important that we celebrate the amazing tourism offering that we have in this country. And so that's one of our themes this year, is amazing, you know.
Now, Siren Radio is obviously based in Lincoln, a jewel in the East Midlands. I also have huge connections with the Northeast and often trying to sort of push Captain Cook country, or as we like to refer to it, Middlesbrough, as a key aspect. But with respect to that, again, even go further, you've got Catherine Cookson country and so on. And I do remember a few years ago, you used to go through the country and you'd see, this is so-and-so country, this is so-and-so country, and identifying areas with particular zones, etc. Clearly, I appreciate that referring to anything as Captain Cook country in a post-colonial world could be seen as problematic, but that's another issue. In terms of the culture of tourism, do you often feel as though there's a mindset which says, we've got to get away, we've got to have a holiday, we've got to go to Spain, we've got to go to another country, etc., and they forget the jewels that are literally in their own backyard as far as people are concerned?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point. I think, you know, the age I am, I grew up taking domestic holidays, and you almost get trained into that, don't you? And because there have been generations who have got used to foreign holidays, perhaps they don't associate the wonderful offering we have. For me, you know, international visitors recognise how wonderful we are, and over 50% of international visitors come to London, fantastic city, but they don't go anywhere else. And so I really want to help drive those visitors into the regions of England where we have a superb offering.
A couple of events coming up in May this year, which some or two people might have heard of. A coronation of King Charles III, of course, being one, although it seems that Kylie and many other pop stars are unable to actually perform at the concert. That's another issue again. But, of course, there's also Liverpool hosting, yes, that wonderful kitsch event extraordinaire, the Eurovision Song Contest, on behalf of the Ukraine, obviously. Are you expecting those to be key drivers in terms of actually people coming in and saying, yeah, we've got to be there and we need to experience living history?
Absolutely. I mean, I think in this country, we do events really well, and we do events like this really well, you know, and there are people who will travel to feel part of the pomp, the spectacular nature of a coronation. You know, it's a once in a lifetime experience. So absolutely, we're expecting that to be huge. And then you've got Eurovision, and you know, maybe it's a love it or loathe it thing. I am a huge Eurovision fan. I might as well admit that now. And I think Eurovision is great because it gives us an opportunity to show what a welcoming destination we are. Also, the fact that we are delivering this in conjunction and on behalf of the Ukraine shows, you know, how sensitive we are to our place in the world. I just think it's a superb opportunity.
Well, that brings us neatly round to the Tourism Superstar Awards. Now, I'm presuming this is an award that you actually give to the best tourist or the craziest tourist, etc. It's literally the venues or places they're likely to go to.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if I got to go around trying to select a tourist?
As yeah, the, as the I mean, you know, everybody would be competitive. They'd come from overseas and say, it's me.
I took five short breaks.
No,
this is about us celebrating the amazing people who work in our industry. You know, often unsung heroes are often people who are just passionate about what they do. This year, during English Tourism Week, we will be announcing the winner, and we have a shortlist of 10. You can go on our website, you can see that shortlist, and I hope people will cast votes.
Visitbritain.org, of course, is the go-to website where you can find the details and so on from that. I've got to ask you, Andrew, do you have any particular parts of our green and pleasant land which you think, yeah, I secretly have a fondness for Skegness, for instance?
Now, that's like asking someone, do they have a favourite child?
Yeah, I thought you'd respond like that. I did.
But look, I'm quite happy to say I am, I'm quite open in my views. I love the Northeast. I think it has some of the most wonderful coastline. And I think it, like many of our regions, encapsulates the diversity of our product. You know, you've got great cities, you've got wonderful countryside, you've got great coastline. And I could tell that same story across the country in Cumbria. I could tell it down the country in the Wash. We have such a wonderful offering. I think I could travel exclusively in England my whole life and not see everywhere.
Yeah, very diplomatic answer, very appropriate answer. I bet you could even actually say something good about the joy of Millwall and visiting Millwall. But there we are. That's just a line entirely. I'm just saying, it's just out there. Andrew Stokes, Director at Visit England. Huge thanks and keep on keeping on.
Thank you very much. Lovely to talk to you.
I'll never forget the moment we kissed the night of the hayride, the way that we hugged to try to keep warm while taking the sleigh ride.
Magic moments, memories we've been sharing. Magic moments, when two hearts are caring. Time can't erase the memory of these magic moments filled with love. The telephone call that tied up the line for hours and hours, the Saturday dance, I got up the nerve to send you some flowers. Magic moments, memories we've been sharing. Magic moments, when two hearts are caring. Time can't erase the memory.
Whenever our team was scoring a touchdown,
the time that the floor fell out of my car when I put the clutch down,
the penny arcade, the games that we played, the fun and the prizes,
the Halloween hop when everyone came in funny disguises.
Magic moments.